the music maker. Of course I know about Eastree, Wurmskull Cloran said. It's the stuff children learn at school. Only the other day, at Tace Lemmer's post office, Tace's little son Stoffel started reading out of his history book about a man called Vasco da Gama, who visited the Cape. At once, Dirk Snyman started telling young Stoffel about the time when he himself visited the Cape. But young Stoffel didn't take much notice of him. So Dirk Snyman said, that showed you. Anyway, Dirk Snyman said that what he wanted to tell young Stoffel was the last time he went down to the Cape, a stranger came and sat down right next to him in the tram. What was more, Dirk Snyman said, was that people seemed to think nothing of it. Yes, it's a queer thing about wanting to get into history. Take the case of Mani Kruger, for instance. Mani Kruger was one of the best farmers in the Marico. He knew just how much peach brandy to pour out for the tax collector to make sure that he would nod dreamily at everything Mani said. And at a time of drought, Mani Kruger could run to the government for help much quicker than any man I ever knew. Then one day, Mani Kruger read an article in the Kaartboerder about a musician who said that he knew more about music than Napoleon did. After that, having first read another article to find out who Napoleon was, Mani Kruger was a changed man. He could talk of nothing but his place in history and of his musical career. Of course, everybody knew that no man in the Marico could be counted in the same class with Mani Kruger when it came to playing the concertina. No Bushveld dance was complete without Mani Kruger's concertina. When he played a fast trap, you couldn't keep your feet still. But after he had decided to become the sort of musician that gets into history books, it was strange the way that Mani Kruger altered. For one thing, he said he would never play again at a dance. We all felt sad about that. It was not easy to think of the Bushveld dances of the future. There would be the peach brandy in the kitchen, in the voorkamer, the feet of the dancers would go through the steps of the Scottish and the polka and the waltz and the mazurka. But on the Rimpi's bench in the corner where the musician sat, there would be no Mani Kruger. And they would play Die Fahl Haare en die Blau Ooge and Vat Jou Goed en Trek Verre. But it would be another's fingers that swept over the concertina keys. And when, with the dancing and the peach brandy, the young men called out, Dagbreek toe, it would not be Mani Kruger's head that bowed down to the applause. It was sad to think about this. For so long at the Bushveld dances, Mani Kruger had been the chief musician. And of all of those who mourned the change that came over Mani, we could see that there was no one more grieved than Letta Steyn. And Mani said such queer things at times. Once he said that what he had to do to get into history was to die of consumption in the arms of a princess, like another musician he'd read about. Only it was hard to get consumption in the Marico, because the climate is so healthy. Although Mani stopped playing his concertina at dances, he played a great deal in another way. He started giving what he called recitals. I went to several of them. They were very impressive. At the first recital I went to, I found that the front part of Mani's voorkamer was taken up by rows of benches and chairs that he'd borrowed from those of his neighbors who didn't mind having to eat their meals on candle boxes and upturned buckets. At the far end of the voorkamer, a wide green curtain was hung on a piece of string. When I came in, the place was full. I managed to squeeze in on a bench between Jan ter Blanche and a young woman in a blue kapie. Jan ter Blanche had been trying to hold this young woman's hand. Mani Kruger was sitting behind the green curtain. He was already there when I came in. I knew it was Mani by his velschoens, which were sticking out from underneath the curtain. Letta Steyn sat in front of me. Now and again, when she turned round, I saw that there was a flush on her face and a look of dark excitement in her eyes. At last everything was ready, and Joel, the farm assistant to whom Mani had given this job, slowly drew the green curtain aside. A few of the younger men called out, "Middag, oom Manny," and Jan ter Blanche asked if it wasn't very close and suffocating sitting like that behind a piece of green curtain. Then he started to play, and we all knew it was the most wonderful concertina music we'd ever had listened to. It was Manny Creel at his best. He'd practiced a long time for that recital. His fingers flew over the keys. The notes of the concertina swept into our hearts. The music of Manny Creel lifted us right out of that voorkamer into a strange and rich and dazzling world. It was fine. The applause right through was terrific. And at the end of each piece, the assistant closed the curtains in front of Manny. And we sat waiting for a few minutes until the curtains were drawn aside again. But after the first time, there was no more laughter about this procedure. The recital lasted for about an hour and a half, and the applause at the end was even greater than at the start. And during those 90 minutes, Manny Creel left his seat only once. And that was when there was some trouble with the curtain and he got up to kick the assistant. At the end of the recital, Manny did not come forward and shake hands with us, as we'd expected. Instead, he slipped through behind the green curtain into the kitchen and sent word that we could come and see him around the back. At first, we thought this was a bit queer, but Letta Stein said it was all right. She explained that in other countries, the great musicians and stage performers all received their admirers at the back. Jan ter Blanche said that if these actors used their kitchens for entertaining their visitors, he wondered where they did their cooking. Nevertheless, most of us went around to the kitchen and we had a good time congratulating Manny Creel and shaking hands with him. And Manny spoke much of his musical future and of the triumphs that would come to him in the great cities of the world when he would stand before the curtain and bow to the applause. Manny gave a number of recitals after that. They were all equally fine. Only as he had to practice all day, he couldn't pay much attention to his farming. The result was that his farm went to pieces and he got into debt. The court messengers came and attached half his cattle while he was busy practicing for his fourth recital. And he was practicing for his seventh recital when they took away his ox wagon and mule cart. Eventually, when Manny Creel's musical career reached that stage when they took away his plough at the last of his oxen, he sold up what remained of his possessions and left the bushveld on the way to those great cities that he'd so often talked about. It was very grand, the send-off that the Mariko gave him. The Predikant and the Volksraad member both made speeches about how proud the Transvaal was of their great son. Then Manny replied. Instead of thanking his audience, however, he started abusing us left and right, calling us a mob of hooligans and soulless Philistines, and saying how much he despised us. Naturally, we were very much surprised at this outburst, as we'd always been kind to Manny and encouraged him all we could. But Letta Stein explained that Manny didn't really mean the things he said. She said it was just that every great artist was expected to talk that way about the place he came from. So we knew it was all right. And the more offensive the things were that Manny said about us, the louder we shouted, "Woor, woor for Manny!" There was a particularly enthusiastic round of applause when he said that we knew as much about art as a boom slang. His language was hotter than anything I'd ever heard, except once, and that was when De Wet said what he thought of Cronier's surrender to the English at Paardeberg. We could feel that Manny's speech was the real thing. We cheered ourselves hoarse that day. And so Manny Creel went. We received one letter to say he'd reached Pretoria, but after that we heard no more from him. Yet always, when Letta Stein spoke of Manny, it was as a child speaks of a dream, half wistfully and always with the voice of a wistful child. She would tell me how one day, he would return. And often, when it was dusk, I would see her sitting on the stoop, gazing across the veld into the evening, down the dusty road that led between the thorn trees and beyond the Dwarsberg, waiting for the lover who would come to her no more. It was a long time before I again saw Marnie Krüger. And then it was in Pretoria. I had gone there to interview the Volksraad member about an election promise. It was quite by accident that I saw Marnie, and he was playing the concertina, playing as well as ever, I thought. I went away quickly, but what affected me very strangely was just that one glimpse I had of the green curtain of the bar in front of which Marnie Krüger played.